this lecture. So I won't do that, but I just want to mention a few important points that you should be aware about quantum field theory, and I hope most of these points would be discussed in the next lecture, especially the lectures by Michael Peskin and the other lecture about high energy physics. So what I would have liked to talk about is first to discuss a little bit more the gauge symmetries. Symmetries, the decoupling of unphysical states, because I was very, very imprecise, I just say that they decoupled, and something which is very important in the formulation of many theories with the gauge symmetry, which is called the BRST symmetry, which is in fact a very important tool in order to formulate the quantization of gauge theory in the canonical framework, to see how you can incorporate ghosts and unphysical states in an Hilbert space in a well-defined way. But I won't have time to explain that. Another important point is the existence of symmetries which are called the chiral symmetries, which are associated to the existence of massless fermions. And in particular, the fact that these symmetries are anomalous. Namely, we have seen example of a symmetry of a classical theory which was anomalous because of quantum effect, which was the scale invariance of the 5-4 theory. But other symmetries, in particular the symmetries associated to existence of massless fermions, are also anomalous, and it's something very, very important to understand the dynamics and the spectrum of fermions coupled to gauge theory. Another thing I wanted to have shown is the existence of, when you have a symmetry in a theory, you can have a spontaneous symmetry breaking. This means that you have a theory with some symmetry, but the vacuum is not invariant under this symmetry, and this happens everywhere. For instance, when you have a potential, it's happened in classical physics, when you have a potential which is like that, which is symmetric, you may very well have two minimum energy states, so two vacua of your theory, which has perfect vacua, but simply they are not symmetric. And finally, and that's also something which is very important to understand the physics of the standard model, because spontaneous symmetry breaking occurs both in the presence of fermions. And finally, there is something which is related to this phenomenon, which is the famous X mechanism, which is one of the essential features of gauge theory coupled to some field with a symmetry. But I'm sure you will discuss this in the lecture by Michael Peskin, because those are some of the essential ingredients of the standard model of high energy of fundamental interaction. Okay. And today, what I would like to discuss is in fact not any of these aspects, but I want to come back to renormalization theory and renormalization group, because you will need it in the conformal field theory lectures, which starts next week. So I will come back to renormalization group, but I will discuss it from the point of view of effective theory. Namely, this is a formulation which is often denoted by Wilsonian renormalization group theory and the concept of an effective quantum field theory. Okay. And I remember at the end of one of my lectures on renormalization group, we started to discuss about the concept of renormalization group, the fact that in a renormalized theory, the coupling constant, in fact, the effective coupling constants vary with the scale at which you consider the physics of the model. And that's, in fact, another way to look at this effect in a quantum field theory, but a very important different way to look at this problem. And the idea is, in fact, as I explained very briefly at the end of the lecture, to take seriously the idea that there is, you, when you consider a quantum field theory, in fact, or any theory, there is some fundamental, if you want, fundamental, well, fundamental means that I will consider it as a basic aspect of the theory. There is some fundamental high energy cutoff that we denoted lambda, which means that we are considering the physics described by some quantum field theory only at energies less than this ultraviolet cutoff. Okay? And the idea of this formulation due to Ken Wilson, that's why it's called Wilsonian, is that, in fact, when you are considering quantum field theory, you are, for instance, if you formulate this quantum field theory by the way of doing a functional integration, you quantize this theory by integrating. So let us consider some quantum field theory. It will be described by some fields, phi, okay? And I will take in the following a scalar field, but this denotes the set of the fields of the theory. And it has an action, S of phi. Okay, and I have to compute something which I denote in the functional formalism. Some integration of the field degrees of freedom of the exponential of this factor, I S of the action. Okay, as usual, I set in this discussion h bar equal 1. I normalize things so that h bar equal 1. And in fact, when doing this, you have to think that, in fact, you are integrating only on the degrees of freedom which have an energy or a momentum, okay, which are less than lambda. And let us consider this idea a little bit more precise. So it means that instead of integrating over all the field configuration phi of x, you may consider, for instance, that instead of integrating over x, you use as a variable of integration their Fourier component. So I am in d-dimensional space, so d is the dimension of space-time. Okay. And instead of integrating over phi of x, so this means can as well say that you are integrating over the value of the field on any point, or that you are integrating over all components of the field d of phi hat of k. Okay? So in fact, you are integrating over all the Fourier components of the field. And in fact, the fact that in fact you have some fundamental high energy cutoff means that you have a bound on the four momenta, which are, in fact, you are only integrating over the momenta of the fluctuation of the field, which have a momenta less than lambda. So k is a form. So k is the d momentum. And here I am integrating only over the component, the quantum fluctuation of the field, which have a wavelength, if you want, or an impulsion smaller than lambda, namely which have a wavelength larger than 1 over lambda. You see? So I'm integrating only on quantum fluctuations of phi with a wavelength L typically larger than pi over lambda, or something like that. Something like that. Okay? Or let us say this pi factor is not very important. It's basically larger than 1 over lambda. Okay? And now the idea of okay, and let us take a very simple example. I will take as an example the scalar field theory we have considered before, the phi 4 theory, scalar quantum field theory, where I just phi the scalar field, and the action is simply the action we consider for the phi 4 theory, so it's d dx. So I'm in I'm using I am in Minkowski space, so the action by that minus v of phi, and the difference with the phi 4 theory I was considering before is that here I am just taking a general potential, so I consider that v of phi is simply of the form sum over k of lambda k phi to the k, where the lambda k are the coupling constant of the theory. Okay? And since I am considering a theory with an ultraviolet cutoff, I don't have to care about whether this theory is not renormalizable or renormalizable or not renormalizable. Yes? Yes. Sorry. Of course. So I have the usual kinetic term, and I have a potential which is a general potential. So it's a general potential, and I don't have to care about the whether the theory is renormalizable or not renormalizable, because I have an ultraviolet cutoff. So this will contain not only phi squared and so lambda 4, but I allow to also to have phi 6 term, phi 8 term, etc., etc., even if I keep the potential to be an even function, and I can consider a potential which contains also phi to the power 3, phi to the 5th, etc., 5, etc. Okay, so I just consider a general potential. Okay, and in this calculation, it is natural to, in fact, it is natural to express everything. It is natural to express everything. To express phi and the couplings, lambda k, in units of lambda. Because this theory is defined, in fact, with respect to this fundamental high energy cutoff. So everything has dimensions, but in fact, you may think that in units of the, so it's units of energy, if you want, but I take as a unit of energy just the ultraviolet cutoff, the maximal energy which is possible in this theory. And therefore, if you consider that, you realize, of course, so let us do a bit of dimensional analysis. If I do dimensional analysis, I realize that, of course, x has a dimension of the inverse of an energy. Okay? The action here must be dimensionless, and therefore, the field phi has the dimension of lambda to the power d minus 2 divided by 2. Okay? The potential must have the dimension of lambda to the power d, because this has to be dimensionless. And therefore, you realize that the coupling of the term phi to the power k must have a dimension lambda to the power d minus k times d minus 2 over 2. Okay? So these numbers are called just, in fact, the engineering dimensions of the couplings and of the field phi. And therefore, in fact, express this means simply that I will state that, in fact, I will define a dimensionless quantity dimensionless quantities, like first the field. So I define first, in fact, I define a new variable which should be little x, which will be lambda. So I will rewrite position as lambda times little x. So this is dimensionless. So it's the dimension in units of 1 over in units of 1 over lambda. Okay. The field, I will rewrite it as lambda to the power, let us call this, d minus 2 over 2. So I will write that delta phi times the new field psi, with delta phi equals d minus 2 over 2. And this is what is called the dimension of the field phi. Okay, and finally, all the lambda k case, I re-express them by defining lambda k to be equal to lambda to the power delta k. This is dimension of the coupling k, times dimensionless coupling gk, where delta k is this quantity here. It's d minus k times d minus 2 over 2. Okay? So I know, yes?
The small x defining that way, is that dimensionless or?
It is dimensionless because, I'm sorry, there is a minus one. Yeah, I'm very sorry. Yes, of course. Yes. So this is a dimension of a length, and this is just a pure number. This is a pure number. This is a function of x. And in this way, you can rewrite the action in an obvious way. This action is simply will be rewritten as integral dd of small x minus 1/2 d mu psi d mu psi minus a new potential u of psi with u of psi equals sum over k, the new dimensionless couplings times the new dimensionless field psi to the power k. Okay, and in this action, in fact, now psi, in fact, the component of psi in this new dimensionless unity, the ultraviolet cutoff is 1. So I'm dealing with an action where the maximal energy is 1. Okay? And the minimal distance is 1. Okay? With this rescale. So here I have just been doing a simple rescaling to express everything in dimensionless quantity. And we shall see why it's useful. Okay, so now here comes the idea of Wilson of performing of what is called the renormalization group transformation. Okay, the idea is not to integrate over all the fluctuation of the field, but integrate only on the component of phi, let us say of phi here, this phi or this this psi, which with high wavelengths, high momenta, or if you prefer, small wavelengths. And see what's coming out. So the idea is the following. We can always define, decompose phi into the following thing. So you have seen that this is the definition of phi in terms of its Fourier component. Let us define a high energy component, a low energy. So let us first introduce a lambda prime, a new cutoff less than lambda. You see? And The idea is integrate over all the k, all the momenta, which are in between lambda and lambda prime, but only on this momenta. Okay, how do you do that? You separate the field you are integrating in the functional integral in two components. I write phi, I will write this phi with this sign to designate that it will contain only the components which are less than lambda prime. So let me define this as simply as the integral of dk, ddk of phi hat, hat of k I k x. But I only, so I have this factor 2 pi, which is not very important, but I integrate only over the k which are less than lambda prime. You see, here I am integrating only on the k which are less than lambda, because I don't pay attention to any of the modes. The field cannot have any component with a momenta higher than lambda. And I separate this into this, and a fluctuating part, which I denote phi tilde of k, which is the remaining part, which is the integral over d dk, 2 pi over d, the same thing, phi height of k, eikx, with k in between lambda prime and lambda. Okay. You see? So I am integrating a picture which is useful, is that in momentum space, this is K1, K2, etc., or K0, K1. I am the field, the original field has a momentum, has all its momenta living in some ball with radius lambda. And what I am doing is that I am separating this component into, so this is lambda, this is lambda prime, and I'm integrating only over the fields, the component of the fluctuation, which are living in this. See? Okay? And once you have done that, okay? Well, obviously, it is clear that the field phi is equal to phi, the small, this is called, for instance, the slow part of the field, the slow part of field, and it's clear that phi is the sum of the slow part plus the fast part. Okay? That's obvious. Okay? Yes? Pardon?
The second one, it says phi tilde of k, but the inferring
kind. No, no, it's phi hat of k. So this is defined as phi. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, yes. This is phi tilde of k, but phi tilde of. Okay? And so the idea is that instead of writing this, you can obviously integrate separately over phi, first over phi. Tilde and then over phi hat. So you can rewrite this as, so instead of integrating over the phi, let me integrate only over the phi tilde. You see? Yes?
You have like a Fourier transform with phi tilde of k into phi tilde of s.
I draw a tilde, but this is an. This is a hat. This is the original hat. Okay? So let me integrate only over the phi tilde of hat. But with the given phi, which is given by this formula. Well, you obviously get a result. So here I integrate only over the momenta k, which are in between lambda and lambda prime in this functional integral. And I get something which depends, of course, only on phi less than, on the slow part, because I have integrated. I start from a phi, which is the sum of a slow and a fast part, and I integrate over the fast component. I get something which depends only on the slow component. Let us call this the exponential of I times something which I call the effective action of phi slow. Okay? By this is the definition. So, of course, the difficult part is to compute this object. So let us call this the effective action. Okay? Obviously, we have that the original theory, quantum theory, defined by an action S of phi and a regulator lambda, is the same than the effective theory with the action S effective of phi smaller than the slow part and the cutoff lambda prime, well, of course, as far as its low energy behavior is concerned. Of course, I'm integrating over the high momentum or high energy part, so I am losing information about the information, but if I am interested in the low energy behavior of this theory, I can as well consider this effective theory, because I have not integrated on any on the low energy degrees of freedom of the theory. Okay? But the difference between this original theory and this effective theory is that the cutoff is changed. Of course. So now, for instance, remember, we started from a theory which was of this form. Okay? And let us assume that, so here I will make an assumption. In fact, the real world is a bit more complicated, but that's a good approximation. So in fact, it's a good approximation in some cases, not all, is that this effective theory for S. So remember, we started from S of phi, which was of the form integral d4x minus 1/2 d phi squared plus some potential v of phi. Okay? The assumption is that by going to this procedure, I get an effective action for the slow part of the field phi, the low momentum component of phi, which is of the same form than d4x, namely with a coefficient like this. Now it will be d phi hat, d phi, the slow part squared, minus a new potential, phi hat, and with just a possible change of normalization of this coefficient. So you see, so this coefficient 1 here became a coefficient z, and this potential v became a potential v effective. You see? And let us assume that we have no other terms generated by this operation. Yes? Pardon?
The potential has changed
its
sign.
Oh, that's because, as usual, I made a time mistake. Okay? Okay, let us assume that by doing such an operation, the effective action is the same form than the original one, but just there is a change in the normalization of the kinetic term, and there is a change in the potential. So we assume that there are no generation of d squared of phi squared, so higher derivatives. So we assume that there are no higher generation of higher derivatives, which is a strong assumption, but it turns out that it's a good approximation in some cases. Okay? Okay? So now, what is the next step? We want to compare this effective theory with the original theory. So in order to do that, what we have to do is to re-express S effective in terms of dimensionless quantities, dimensionless objects. Namely, but these objects are to be, now they have to be expressed in units of the new cutoff, lambda prime, instead of lambda. Remember? So, if I am doing that, what should I do? Oops. Of course, well, first, so I want to re-express this in units of size. So I will define the slow part. So, I define nu x as being lambda prime x prime minus 1. Lambda prime minus 1 x prime. In this system of units, the new theory has the minimal distance in x prime is 1, and the maximal momenta is 1 in this new units of distance. Okay? Now I want to express the field phi, the slow part of the phi, and of course I am tempted to say that this will be lambda prime with the same power delta of phi, where delta of phi was d minus 2 over 2 times a new field psi prime. But if I do this change of variable, this z will still be there. And you have seen that in general, you may have a change of z. So in fact, it's natural to express it as z minus 1 half in addition. So I take into account the fact that when computing this effective theory by integrating out the high momentum degrees of freedom of the quantum fluctuation of the field, the high momentum part of the quantum fluctuation of the field, there is a renormalization of the kinetic term. So in order to compare the effective action to the original action in dimensionless, in a system of units which is dimensionless with respect to the cutoff of each theory, I have to make this small additional change of variables. Okay? And then, yes?
So z is a dimensionful quantity in general?
Z is a number.
Okay.
Z is a number. Because this has the same dimension of this.
Right.
So z is a number.
Yeah, okay.
It's a number which comes out from this calculation. The difficult part of this is this calculation. But assume that you are able to do this calculation, you find some number. Okay? And finally, of course, what you need to do, okay, and once you have done this formulation, and if you know V effective, okay, you end up with the fact that S effective of the low momentum part of the fluctuation can be rewritten exactly the same way of d x prime over the space minus 1/2 of d psi prime squared. Okay? And then you get a new potential, u of psi prime, that I will call u prime. Okay? And this new potential, u prime of phi, of psi prime, is of course well, I've made this change of variables. So this is lambda prime to the power d times d effective of I hat. Okay? But it can be expanded in psi prime, so it can be expanded into sum over k of some psi prime to the power k with some couplings, but now these couplings, this g prime k, are dimensionless couplings. So we started from a potential which is like that, and we end up with a potential which is like this, u prime of psi prime, okay, with nu renormalized couplings g prime of k, okay, which are dimensionless. Okay? Yes? Yes?
If we're not working in the... Well, should there be a minus there in front of the differential? I mean, we're not working with...
Pardon? We're not working in Euclidean. Oh, in the Euclidean? No, here I am working in the Minkowski formalism. Oh, here there is a plus. Yes, I'm sorry. Because this is d mu, d mu. Yes, there is a plus. No, there is a minus. It's because I am using... There is a minus because I am using this symmetric, which is minus. It's not very important. You can do exactly the same calculation in the linear formalism. And it will give the same result. Okay? But it's a minus if I am using this Strauss solution. Okay? So now, so you see that you started from a theory with some coupling constant expressed, dimensionless coupling constant GK, expressed in unit of lambda, and after integrating over the high momentum mode of the theory, re-expressing the new couplings in terms of a new cutoff, you end up with new dimensionless coupling. Okay. And so you have, in fact, a transformation in the space of couplings. So let me, now we have this idea. We have this picture that in the space of dimensionless coupling, in the space of dimensionless couplings, we have this space with these couplings, let's say G2, G4, etc. You start from an original point somewhere here, which are the original coupling at scale lambda. You integrate over the momenta between lambda to some lambda prime less than lambda, you end up somewhere else. You see? So here I have a point, let me denote this is a vector. I have a vector. You can consider that you have a vector G bar, which is the data of all the GK. So it's a point in space of couplings, okay, and I end up with renormalized coupling G prime, okay. And now the idea is that, of course, you can iterate the transformation, go to some lambda double tilde, get some new couplings. And of course, the position you end up here depends only on where you started from here. So if you know where you are here, you know where you end up. Now you iterate. You end up here, but this depends only on where you were here before. So it's a deterministic process which depends only on the position at the previous step. See? It doesn't depend. So now you continue, and at each step, it doesn't depend on the history, it depends only on the previous step. Okay? And doing that, you can iterate the transformation up to some lambda divided by some big number s. And doing that, you obtain what is called a scaling transformation. By a factor S, which may be very big. Even if you make a small transformation at each step, at the end, you end up with something which depends on G bar of S. So some G bar of S will depend on the starting point and G bar of S. Okay? And in the same way, remember, at each step, we have iterated the process for the psi prime. So you see that, in fact, we started from a psi, some given psi. We ended with a psi prime. So we had also, so we have a randomization for the couplings. So we have a renormalization. Of the couplings, because we start from a G and we end up with a G of S, and we have also a renormalization of the field. So starting from psi, we end up with a psi of S. Okay?
How did you label your axes? It's G what and G.
Pardon?
On your axes. What does it say?
What does it say that?
Yeah, G. Something to G something.
It's just I am iterating this transformation.
Yeah,
here I did once this transformation by factor S, and then I'm iterating it.
It's G1.
What?
That's G1.
Is it G2, G4, G1, G... I don't know what you wrote.
Yeah, your y-axis.
So this is the axis for one of the coupling associated to...
G2.
To phi. So, so the coupling here, I take a potential which is of the form here. G2... Phi 4, psi 4, psi 2, plus G 4, psi 4, plus G 6, psi 6, etc. But of course, I may have G 1, G 2, etc., G 3, etc., but for simplicity, I'm considering an even potential. But in general, I have a space of couplings, and this is a point in this big dimensional space, high dimensional space of all the possible couplings. Yes? Okay? So, once you have done that, and in fact, this psi, so I can define this as a, sorry, I will define this as a psi S, because psi is a field. And in fact, at each time I'm doing a rescaling by a factor Z, so in fact, there is a, there is a normalization by a factor Z of S. In fact, the normalization usually is psi S equals some factor Z of S times the original psi. Okay, but I won't discuss the field renormalization much. I will concentrate on what's happening on the coupling constant. Okay? Okay. So now, let us assume that, in fact, we are making small, very small, renormalization transformation, small integration at each step. So in fact, we are going from we are integrating over the momenta between lambda and lambda prime, but we assume that lambda prime is slightly smaller than lambda. So lambda prime is simply 1 minus ds lambda. If I'm doing a scale transformation like that, with ds smaller. Ds small. Okay? And then you see that since this transformation are in fact depends only on what you are doing, you can say that if you are making a scale transformation for a factor ds, I'm going from a gk into a g prime k, which will be simply gk plus some small variation of gk. It will be an infinitesimal transformation. And I can see what is the variation of gk with this ds, delta s. Okay? And this depends only on the points where we are. So it will be some function, let's call this wk, of all the coupling we started from. You see? Yes?
So I'm a bit confused. When we go along that flow there,
yes,
are we going towards higher energies or towards lower energies?
We are going into lower energy. Because we are integrating over more and more high energy. Remember? We started, we have this space of energy which is like that in the momentum k. This is the momentum space k. This is the cutoff lambda. We first integrate over this, then over another shape. Then, like another shape, at the end, it's like eating an onion. At the end, we end up only with what's happening at, so here we have considering what's happening at energy of the order of smaller or of the order of lambda, and then we are interested in E at energy smaller of lambda divided by S. So very small energy.
We start at the high energy cutoff.
And yes.
Assume that we know the coupling constant there,
yes,
and work our way from there.
Yes. Yes. Okay? So, the point. Pardon?
Theory, you specify an energy scale and what the couplings are at that
yes.
energy scale.
Yes. Yes.
You watch up.
Yes. So I'm watching up. I'm assuming that I know the theory at high energy, but I don't know the effect of the quantum fluctuation at the energy at the energies and wavelengths smaller than this big high energy scale. And I want to compute the effect of the quantum fluctuation at lower energies. Yes.
The amount that you shift lambda by is finite.
Is it
finite? So every time you're shifting by a finite amount, are you going
to
do this process?
No, here, now I am making a small transformation, and I will do many, many small transformations. Yeah, infinitesimal. Okay? And if I am doing that, I will denote this by a small s because it's simple. So when I am doing that, so I make a transformation by a small factor. You see, of the order of ds times lambda. Okay? And then I have a transformation which depends only, so it depends only on where we are in the space of coupling. You see? And I have one law of transformation for any coupling. You see? So we have the wk, and those functions wk are, in fact, defines a vector field w in the space of couplings. Okay? And in order to understand what happens if you start from a given g bar and to see where you end up after a finite number of transformations, you have to iterate those infinitesimal transformations along many infinitesimal transformations. And in fact, what you have to do is just to integrate the, it's called the flow equation, which is simply S d over ds of gk of s equal wk of g bar of s. In fact, you have a vector field in the space of coupling. So this is a component of the vector W. W bar is a vector. And you have simply to follow this flow by integrating such an equation. Okay? So if you are able to compute this vector field, so this is a vector field, it's enough to integrate this equation to know what are the effective couplings as a function of the coupling at the high energy scale. You see? Okay? So now, this vector field, in fact, I will show you how to compute in a simple case, but it turns out that this vector field WK of G bar, I denoted W because of Wilson, is nothing in quantum theory that minus the beta function of a coupling. So the vector fields are related in quantum field theory to what we denoted the beta function. Okay? And now let us make a calculation. I have only 20 minutes or 25 minutes left, but I will show you, I hope, that in these times, one can do, with some approximation, a calculation of this vector flow and study its property. So we shall study the theory which was described by S of phi equal integral of d4x. Now I will draw d phi squared plus v of phi. Now I will be in Euclidean space instead of Minkowski space, so I'm using this matrix. I have no minus sign, but the calculation is exactly the same. Okay? And I will do this renormalization group calculation using what is called the local potential approximation. Okay? And I will skip a lot of technicalities. So, in fact, basically between each equation I will be writing, there will be some technical problem under the carpet. But I would just want to give you the idea of how it works. So, the local potential approximation amounts simply to use the calculation of the effective action at one loop we have been doing last week. Remember that the effective action was something like the original action plus one half trace of logarithm of minus the Laplacian plus. Remember, we got this equation for what is called the full effective action, quantum effective action. Quantum effective action, okay? Which is supposed to take into account all the quantum fluctuation of the field. Now, think about what does this mean, really? What is this term? This term is a trace. It's a trace of an operator. What means the trace of an operator? The trace of an operator means that, in fact, we are integrating over space the diagonal matrix element of this is capital X, the diagonal matrix element of this operator. Okay? Now assume that, in fact, in this formula, phi of X is approximately constant. Then this operator, it's just the log of minus the Laplacian plus some constant depending on phi. And therefore, it's an operator which is translationally invariant, so we can rewrite this as integral d4x. We can make a Fourier transform of this, and this is d4k. I am in d dimension, I'm sorry, I am in general d dimension. So this ddk over 2 pi to the power d times the Fourier transform of this operator, which is simply k squared plus the second derivative of the potential. I'm sorry, and there is of course a logarithm of this. Okay? Okay? So this is a function. So you see that this term can be written as the integral over x of a function of the potential. So this term is a correction to the original potential coming from the quantum fluctuations. Okay? So this is a calculation for the full theory. So this is a calculation which must be done for all the k, the momentum of the quantum fluctuation, which are less than lambda. But from this calculation, we can guess very easily what is the form of the effective action S of phi if now we are not integrating over all the momenta from k equals 0 to k less than lambda, but from all the momenta between lambda and lambda prime. And it will be the original action plus 1/2 integral d dx integral d dk over 2 pi over d, the same things, log of k squared plus k squared plus the second derivative of the potential via phi. But now I simply, instead of integrating over the whole onion, I'm just integrating over the first shell of the onion, namely between k lambda and lambda 1 minus ds. Yes?
I just wanted to double check. For you to compute that trace, you assume that phi was constant, right?
I assume that phi is constant. So that's one of the approximations that I'm doing. And I assume that phi is almost constant. It's very slowly varying. And using this approximation, I get this formula. After that, one has to check whether the results we get with this approximation is sensible or not. Okay? But once you have been doing that, and now I can write everything, now we are integrating over a very small momentum shell. I'm sorry, I should have not erased this picture. I am integrating over a small momentum shell this integral. So this integral here amounts to an integral over the sphere of dimension. So it's a sphere of radius lambda in D dimensional momentum space. Okay? Because the momenta is lambda. So this amounts to lambda to the power D ds, the little ds divided by 2 pi to the power d, some number which is the volume of the sphere, the area of the sphere in d-dimensional space. So, and this factor, believe me, is 2 times pi d divided by 2 divided by the gamma function of d over 2. This is just the volume of the sphere. Okay, times the logarithm of, and I can erase this because I will rewrite it here, keep this picture in here, times the logarithm of the momenta, but the square of the momenta is localized on this momentum scale, so it's lambda squared, plus it's going to phi. Okay? So you see that with this simple approximation, I see that the effective action is of the same form than the original action, plus a term, which is some complicated function of phi, which is the logarithm of lambda squared plus the second derivative of the potential at 4 phi. Okay? So now, let us perform the rescaling. Let us perform the rescaling so that we go from the potential V to a potential V psi, and we go to the phi, the field phi to a field phi, where everything is dimensionless. Okay? And you see that this is something which is of order ds. So in fact, it's an infinitesimal transformation. So we see that we have a renormalization where we go from the potential V to a potential V effective, which is V plus ds times something. Okay? And if we do the rescaling, it's an exercise. I will just give you the results because we have only 10 minutes left. But the result is that we get that S d over ds of us of psi. So we get for a renormalization, we start from a potential u of psi, and we end up with a potential us of psi if we do a renormalization. You see? Yes?
That answer that you've written down, is that just the result of the integration?
It's a result of this integration.
But,
so this number is this.
So it doesn't include the integral over d of x.
No, it's just this. Right. I have no integral over d of x. Yeah. But you see that, finally, you get that the potential is transformed into v plus 1 over half times this quantity. And if you do this, you find that finally, performing the rescaling, you find that there is a d times us of psi plus 2 minus d over 2 times psi u prime s of psi. These are the terms which are just coming from the scaling dimension of the field, so it's a classical scaling. Okay, it's just doing dimensional analysis on the action. And then you have the effect of the quantum corrections. And the effect of the quantum correction turns out to be some positive number which contains those factors, but it's not very important. So it's some positive A. A is positive. Times, and since I am re-expressing everything in units of the ultraviolet regulator, I get simply the logarithm of 1 plus the secondary derivative of u at the psi. Okay? So I get here a partial differential equation for the flow equation in the space of potentials U of psi. So you see? So I have, under the form of a simple partial difference equation, an equation which tells me how in the space of potential I move from a potential U to a potential U of S. You see? Yes?
So what are the axes for that?
The
space?
Axes are the G, the GK, because my potential U of psi is always written as sum over K of GK. UK, sorry, psi K. So, giving, if you know all the G's, you know what the potential is. Okay? And now let us make truncate this. So it's a big equation, but it contains non-linear terms. Non-linear terms. Because you see that this is linear in U, this is linear in U, because it's just the derivative of the potential with respect to psi. But this is the logarithm of the second derivative of U. Remember that U primes of psi means simply d U of psi with respect to psi. So U of psi is a function of psi, and psi can be a function of x. Okay, and by the same way, U double prime of psi is just the second derivative with respect to psi of the function U of psi. Okay? So now, once we have this equation, we have everything. We can solve this equation. Okay? And what I will be doing now is that I will be... okay, so once we have done that, we can forget about what we computed, how we got this equation. And let us consider the case where the potential is just of the form U of psi equal one half of something that I will call U2 psi squared. Well, I put potential normalization, no, so I change slightly my normalization. U4 psi to the 4. Okay? So I take this equation, I will keep only the term of order psi squared and psi to the 4. And I will forget about the term of order psi to the 6, etc. I neglect them. Okay? Then you get a flow equation on the potential, on the coefficient U2 and SD over DS of U4. Okay? And remember that this was defined to be minus the beta function associated to the coupling U2 and the beta function associated to the coupling U4. So I denote by U bar just the vector U2, U4. And, well, take this calculation, take this formula, write this potential, compute its first and its second derivative with respect to U, expand in power of psi of U and U squared, get rid of all the psi 4 term, and you get at the end a simple equation, which is 2U2 plus this coefficient, which is positive, U4, minus this coefficient, U2, U4, here. And here you get a 4 minus the dimension, U4 minus 3A, U4 squared. Okay, so this is the result I get when I make this truncation where I keep only the psi squared and the psi 4 term. So you get a flow equation in the space of two couplings. And let us show what are the properties of those couplings, the flow. So this is the space of coupling. Here is U2. Here is U4. Okay? And now I want to show you. So you see that there are different cases depending on the value of the dimension. Okay, so let us first consider the case where D is less than 4. If D is less than 4, you realize that in fact in this equation, well, first you realize that there is a point where nothing happens, which is U2 equal U4 equal 0. This is a point where, of course, the flow doesn't do anything. So this is called the fixed point. A fixed point. And this is a fixed point which is trivial because there are no coupling. Okay? But you realize that there is another fixed point, which is for U4 equal 1 over 3a times four minus D. So somewhere here, you have a fixed point, and U2 is given by some number that I don't have written here, but you have somewhere U4, which is also of order four minus D. So somewhere here, so this is a trivial fixed point that I will call 0. And here, you have a non-trivial fixed point, which I will call W, because it was discovered by Wilson and Michael Fisher. Fisher without a C, which was one of the famous condensed matter physicists. So you have this fixed point W here. So you have two points where nothing happens, where you make a renormalization group transformation. And now if you look at what's happening in the transformation, in fact, you see that if U4 is small, then this is positive, because this is positive, this is negative, but U4 is small, so this term is more important than this one. Okay? So, if you start close here, you go in this direction. Now, if U4 is large, so this is my W fixed point, on the opposite, you are going there. Now, look at what's happening in U2. If U2 is small and U4 is small, it is this term which is more important. So, in fact, if you start from, for instance, if U4 is small, if U4 is 0, U4 stays always 0. But you can check that if you start from a point which is close to this fixed point, in fact, in this direction, you flow away. It's an exercise looking at the flow equations given by this equation. And finally, if you look at what's happening in general, you discover that the flow of this renormalization group transformation are like that. Okay? And that's for, very important, for D less than 4. And that's because the beta function of the U4 coupling here, beta 4, depends only on U4 and is given by this formula. So you have this behavior because if I plot the beta function for the 4 coupling, which is minus in terms of U4, I get a function which is like that. where this is the trivial fixed point, and this is the Wilson-Fisher fixed point. You see? And so when I'm going this, it means that I'm doing that kind of flow transformation. Okay? Now, this is for d less than 4. For d equal 4, this term disappears. The beta function is now like that in terms of u4. So the coupling is like that. Okay? And the flows are like that. This is u4, this is u2. Now, in fact, you only have u2 equal u4 equal 0 as a fixed point. It's both the trivial fixed point and the Wilson-Fisher fixed point, because it means simply that the Wilson-Fisher fixed point has merged and coincide. And the flows are like that. Okay. You see. Okay. And finally, in the last two minutes you might have, let us discuss the physics of this flow. The physics of this flow, these flows, you know, are from, this flow describes flows from energies of the order lambda to energies of the order of lambda divided by S. So from high energy to low energy. Okay? And that tells you, starting from a theory which corresponds to some value of the coupling at our energy, what is the effective theory? So we have a we have a QFT, and here you have an effective QFT, and this flow tells you what are the effective couplings of the effective quantum field theory if you start from a theory with some microscopic coupling which are there. And you see that, in fact, so you see that during this flow tells you where is the effective theory. Okay? And you see that it's very important to have a fixed point. Because you see, for instance, that if you consider the 5-4 theory, so this describes, in fact, I'm considering what is a 5-4 theory. The theory we have been considering in the second week of our lecture. And you see that if you are in dimension less than 4, if you start from a theory which is described by some mass term, so you see that the 5-4 theory, so what I call U2 is just the mass squared, and what I call U4 is just the G coupling of the 5-4 theory. Okay? And you see that, in fact, if you are here, the effective theory is describe what's happening near this line. Because if you start from a theory which goes there, which is there, at high energy, it describes the low energy behavior is described by this Wilson fixed point. But remember that U2 is a mass. So if there is a small mass, this means simply that you have a theory with a mass which grows with the scale, simply because at large distance the mass is you feel it more at large distances. So this flows means simply that you feel more the fact that there is a mass at low energy than at high energy. You see, so the fact that U squared of S grows with S, in fact, as R squared, means simply that a mass term is more important at low energy, as we all know. Okay? So this describes, in fact, this region of the field describes a massive theory. Massive theory. Okay? This region of couplings describes a massive theory with a potential which is like that. Because we have a potential which is of the form, remember, U2 phi squared plus U4 phi 4. This region here, below this line, describes in fact the symmetry broken massive theory. Why? Because in this region, the mass squared term is negative, the g squared term is positive, so we have a potential which is like that. So we are in this situation where you have two equivalent, in equivalent vacuum. Okay? And what is this line describing? It describes a massless phi 4 theory. Okay? Yes? And you see that the fact that you have this fixed point here, these not trivial fixed points, means that in fact the low energy behavior of the massless theory is non-trivial and is governed by this non-trivial fixed point. Yes?
So if you have symmetry breaking occurring, does this mean
yes.
you would go through a point where your theory is effectively massless?
No, here this theory is in this domain the theory is effectively massive because the vacuum is there.
But to get there from a massive theory.
Yeah, to go from a massive theory with a mass which is given basically by the curvature of this potential. Remember the mass squared is in fact basically the mass squared equals the curvature of the potential V of phi. Simply because if you expand V of phi around its minima, you get that V of phi is first one half V is gone at the minimum times phi minus phi minimum squared. So this is the field. Phi minimum is just the vacuum expectation value in the vacuum. These are the excitation, and the excitation are massive. Okay? So in order to go from a phase where the symmetry is unbroken to a phase where the symmetry is broken, the mass has to vanish at some point, and this is the line of coupling where the mass vanishes. You see? And you see that the large distance, so the low energy properties of the, so let us forget about what's happening at phi equal 4. The moral of this is that the low energy properties of the massless phi 4 theory are non-trivial and are described by this fixed point. Not by the, so this is the perturbative fixed point. G equals 0 means that the coupling are small. So when we studied the phi 4 theory in perturbation theory, we were studying the properties of phi 4 theory here. In fact, the validity of all our perturbative calculation was here, or here in a four dimension. Okay? But you see, by this kind of renormalization group calculation, you can see what's happening here. Okay? And so these features, this general picture, which is called the Wilsonian renormalization group, tells you that, in fact, quantum field theory are describe what's happening near fixed point. In order to understand what is the behavior of a quantum field theory, you need to look at fixed point in the phase of coupling. So just a conclusion. to look for a quantum field theory as an effective quantum theory coming from some more complicated and possibly unknown theory, high energy theory. What do you have to do? Study the Renard's group flows and look for fixed points. Because the fixed point will tell you what's happening at low energy. And one last word, you see that around this fixed point, for instance, around this Wilson fixed point, you have two very different kind of coupling. Around this, you have this space of coupling, and around this Wilson-Fischer fixed point, you had one coupling where when you make a perturbation around these couplings, in the low energy limit, you are attracted back to this coupling. And you have one coupling where if you make a perturbation around the fixed point, you flow away from this fixed point. You see? So it means that if you start from a theory which is described for the coupling which makes that it leaves at the fixed point, for some perturbation, so adding some operator to the action, the effect is not important at large distance. But if you add a term like that, the effect is very important. So such perturbation here are called adding relevant couplings, if you want. In the space of coupling, the coupling in this direction is called the relevant coupling, and this one are called irrelevant couplings. And the idea is that if you start from a theory which is given by some action S0 of phi, and you add it and something which is of the form some dx, some coupling gk, and some operator ok of phi, which correspond to a perturbation in this direction, if gk is irrelevant, no change in the low energy physics, so you don't care about those operators. But if GK is relevant, big changes in the low energy physics. You see? And you see that, for instance, the U2 coupling is always relevant, which means the U2 couplings correspond to a coupling of the form integral U2 U squared phi squared. So it corresponds to add a mass term to the theory. And you know very well that if you start from a theory, quantum field theory, which is massless, if you add a small mass term, it would change completely the physics at large distance because the field will become massive. So they won't propagate at large distance as massless field. See? So a mass term corresponds always to a relevant coupling. But for some case of field theory, it may very well be that the other couplings are relevant. And there is a whole zoology of in quantum field theory of those renormalization group flow and the different theory possible for different coupling. And you will be studying this next week in the conformal field theory course. Yes?
In order to have to keep the massless bipolar theory, you have to stay on this line, correct?
Yes, here.
But that's not exactly in the U2 or U4 direction, it's in combination. Right.
Yes, it's a combination, but remember what we have done by studying the normalization group theory. We have seen that in the 5-4 theory, when studying the 5-4 theory. Let's about this. When renormalizing the 5-4 theory, we have seen to have a massless theory, if we start from an action which is of the form d phi squared plus g phi to the 4, we must add a counter term of this form with a minus sign in order to have a massless. It was a mass counter term. Okay? So these are dimension-full coupling. So in fact, this was a lambda, let us say. This is lambda, and this is lambda. If I express everything in terms of dimensionless coupling, the actions rewrites d phi squared plus g psi 4 minus g psi squared. You see? So this is U4. This is U2. Well, there is some number. So this means that in order to have a massless theory, you must have U2 different from zero, but U2 proportional to U4 with a minus sign. So you must have U2 equal minus some number times U4. That's precisely what we find here. So the fact that this line is tilted with respect to the line where U2 is equal to zero means simply that the mass has to be renormalized in order to get a massless theory. So we recover by that kind of calculation just the mass renormalization. Okay. So in fact, this calculation, in fact, are another way to recover all the results which have been concerning the renormalization of 5-4 theory in the standard perturbative framework, but in a non-perturbative way. Well, it's still a bit perturbative, but you have a more non-perturbative view of what's going on. You see? And for instance, the beta function I'm computing using this equation is precisely the beta function for the 5-4 theory we have been calculating last week. If you check the coefficient here by doing the calculation in detail, you will see that this coefficient here for the beta function is precisely the 3 over, 32 pi squared coefficients that we had in 4 dimensions. So this beta function calculated in this Wilson renormalization group scheme is exactly the beta function that we have computed last week using a perturbation theory and perturbative renormalization scheme. Okay? Well, I think it's time to stop because I took too much time, but I hope you will have now a good picture of the two different aspects of renormalization. First, one is getting rid of the infinities to make sense of a theory in high energy. And this one, which is looking at a quantum field theory as an effective quantum field theory coming out from something different at high energy, which are two complementary aspects of what a quantum field theory really is. So thank you.
And presenting with different shirt from last
year. Ah, great. So I start my collection. I hope we have the opportunity
to.
Promise
that you have to come back next year for even a different shirt.
Just for the record.
Just a reminder that that all of you have read the emails that we sent out about next week, and that from next week it's very vital that all of you are on time for both of these lectures. And so thank you.
We have a tutorial later as well, because we finished yesterday. Sorry. And then we have homework as well, just to make happy work. So, yeah, watch out for that.
It's all helpful.
2 weeks ago, you have about 5 days to do that one?
5 days, Dennis.